Lef Fikudei HaMishkan Mishkan HaEdus Asher Pukad Alpi Moshe Avodas Halvim Biad Isamor Ben Aharon HaKohen Uvtzalel Ben Uri Ben Chur Lamate Yehuda Asa Eis Kol Asher Tziva Adonai Es Moshe Vito Ahaliyav Ben Achisamach Lamate Dan Chorosh Vichoshev Virokeim Batacheles Uva Argaman Uvisolas Ashoni Uvashesh. These are the reckonings of the Mishkan of testimony, which were reckoned by Moshe's bidding. The labor of the Levites was under the authority of Itamar, the son of Aaron the Kohen. Bezalel, the son of Uri, the son of Hur, of the tribe of Yehuda, did everything that Hashem commanded Moshe. With him was Aholiyov, the son of Achisamach, of the tribe of Dan. He was a carver, a weaver, an embroiderer, and used to use the materials of wool, turquoise, purple, and scarlet, and with the linen. OU Israel presents
Come in. Welcome.
Recording and first availability, Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the 30th day of Adar HaRishon, also known as the first day of Rosh Chodesh Adar HaSheni, 5779, corresponding to Thursday, March 7th. What can I tell you? I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky. And this show is for Parshat Pekudei, but it will also be for Adar, and the calendar, and whatever else we cover on the show. But first, some appropriate music, not only because we're right on the divider between the two Adars this year, but because Mi Shenichnas Adar Marbim Besimcha really applies to both Adars, according to some opinions. And I was thinking in different terms this morning that because the month of Adar is a month that we are marbeh in simcha, we increase in joy, we need preparation for that. And the preparation is in the form of the first Adar that sort of gets a little bit of singing and a little bit of joy, and it sort of sets the mood for the second. Whichever. The track coming up is called Vinahafochu, one of several different melodies for it. And it's not just a Purim song, it's an Adar song. because the Megillah tells us that the month of Adar looked dark, and it was overturned to become bright for the Jewish people, the month. So on Rosh Chodesh, we definitely will honor the month with V'Nahafochu, and then we'll talk more about the calendar, and then we'll see where our conversation leads us. Okay, with apologies in advance to those people who know the details of the Jewish calendar, I would like to explain things for those who might not know, and maybe I'll have one or two little pointers for those who, even though they know, don't know everything. And I don't, but I know more than the average person because it's a hobby of mine, the Jewish calendar, and maybe even a passion. Okay, Basically, it goes like this. The Torah puts the calendar into our hands. The Jewish people were commanded by God to create their calendar, our calendar, based on various guidelines. The two main guidelines are that months follow the cycle of the lunar phases from no moon to the next new moon. No moon and new moon mean the same thing. And that years follow the sun, specifically follow the seasons, which are governed by the solar year. If 12 lunar months equaled one solar year, we would have a simpler calendar, but it doesn't. A 12-month lunar year is approximately 11 days short of a solar year. A solar year was long thought to be 365 1/4 days. That dates back to when February 29th was added once every 4 years. Somewhere along the line in the 1500s to the 1700s, the people realized that the approximation of 365 1/4 days was a little too high and was creating year after year a larger and larger discrepancy between the calendar and the celestial astronomical dates that were supposed to match certain days of the year. So the secular calendar in the United Kingdom and its colonies at the time in 1752 made two changes. Number one, they declared that the day following the 3rd of September that year should be the 14th of September, or the 2nd was followed by the 14th or whatever, thereby getting rid of an 11-day accumulation of discrepancy. And they changed the leap year rule. The leap year rule became every 4 years, except every 00 years, except every 4 of those. What that means is, let's take it from the beginning, at least from British and American point of view, 1752, now come to 1796. 1796 is divisible by 4. February had 29 days. 1797, no. 1798, no. 1799, no. And in 1800, it was due to be a leap year in the Julian calendar. But in the Gregorian calendar, which we adopted, it lost its February 29th. That's the 00 years of 1800 and 1900. On the other hand, 2000, meaning the year 2000, is the one every 4 of those that does not lose its leap year. And 2100 will not be a leap year, even though it's divisible by 4. And the same thing for 2200 and 2300. And once again, if the calendar stays the same, the year 2400 will be a leap year, breaking the second rule but fulfilling the third condition. If that's confusing, don't worry about it. I would say, since we digressed already into the secular calendar, I would say, of note, that the calendar originally began in March, which is the spring month, which makes it very similar to the Jewish calendar, where the month of Nisan is HaChodesh HaZeh Lochem Rosh Chodeshim. This is the first of your month. Now, we do it because there was a rebirth of the Jewish people at the Exodus that paralleled the natural rebirth of nature after the dead of winter and then showing signs of life come the spring. in the secular calendar, it also had that same kind of feeling, not with the Exodus from Egypt, but with the idea of the world renewing itself in the springtime after the dead of winter. Somewhere along the line, I don't know when, the starting date of the year was pulled back to January 1st. But what you had originally was from March through February, and that's why the last day of February was the one, first of all, that February the month was shorter, because they ran out of days, and it was the end of the year, so they had to chop it to only 28 days. And that became the pivotal date of adding a 29th every so often. At the end of the year, you could know that the year actually was like that because of the Latin prefixes of September, October, November, and December. September literally means the seventh month, which would work if we counted from March, which does not work in our calendar, not our, but our other calendar, does not work because we start in January. Oct is eight. October should have been the eighth month. It was named as the eighth month. And then Nov is nine, and Dec, D-E-C, as in decimal, is 10th month, December. It became the 9th, 10th, 11th, and 12th month when the starting point of the year was pulled back to January 1st. So that's the non-Jewish calendar, and the major point of interest for us from that calendar is that spring used to be the starting point and is our starting point, and that the adding of an extra day when you need it is done at the very end. Now we get back to our calendar. In the Jewish calendar, because Pesach was the beginning of the year, not Rosh Hashanah style, but from a different way of looking at it, Nisan was the first of the month. That's the month we came out of Egypt. And that meant Adar was the 12th month. In fact, upcoming in Megillat Esther, there is repeated reference to the 12th month. That is Adar. And that's where the name is known from, Megillat Esther. So when an extra month was needed, I'll get back to that in a moment, it was reasonable that Adar should be the extra month, A, because it's the end of the year, and that's when you make your adjustments, and B, because it's supposed to be demonstrative that the goal of adding a month is to make sure that Pesach is in the springtime. Because if we said a year has 12 lunar months and we would not have a periodic adjustment, then Pesach would drift back into the winter, and it must not be. There are psukim in the Torah which require Pesach to be the spring month, and reference to Sukkot being in the fall. Okay, now I sort of jumped ahead, and let me go back. Discrepancy of approximately 11 days from the 12 lunar months and the solar year. So this is what works. After 1 year, you're 11 days behind. After 2 years, you're 22 days behind. After 3 years, you're 33 days behind, roughly. And then we say, oh, wait a minute, that third year will not have only 12 months, it will have 13 months. It will not have only one Adar, it will have two Adars. And that's like the year we're experiencing now in 5779. What that means is that the discrepancy is only 3 days, manageable. and Pesach is going to behave itself and be the spring holiday. Then in another year, your accumulation adds 11 more days to the discrepancy, and we're up to 14. And another year brings us to 25. And another year brings us to 36. That's when we add a 30-day month of Adar Aleph, Adar Rishon. And now we're only 6 days in a discrepancy. So we'll add another year, which is 11 days, makes it 17. And we'll add another 11, which brings us to 28. 28 is closer to 30 than 33 was or 36 was. So it's perfect that in the eighth year of a cycle, not the ninth, but the third and the sixth, yes, but we don't go all the way to the ninth. We go to the eighth year, add the 30 days, and now we are 2 days ahead. Then go to the ninth year, brings us 11 back, starting with 2 ahead, we're 9 in discrepancy. Another 11 days makes it 20, another 11 days makes it 31. 31, add Adar, we're now up to the 8th we did. Now the 11th year. The 11th year of a 19-year cycle is now 1 year behind. And now another year passes, and we're 12 in discrepancy. Another year, 23. And another year, 34. With 34, we add a month. We're now in the 14th year of the cycle, if I'm not mistaken. And by adding that other year, our discrepancy of 34 drops to 4. Then we go another 11 is 15. Another 11 is 26. Another 11 is 37. Chop. 30 days out by adding another year, we're talking about 7. I might be off because I'm doing this by heart, so I apologize. And now we have one more year, which takes a 7-year discrepancy and makes it 18. And another year will make it 29. And adding a month makes it a 1 day off. Now, remember, I said the 11 days is only approximate. And with the number of hours and minutes, it works out fairly well that in a 19-year cycle, we have 7 years that have 2 Adars and 12 years that only have 1 Adar. And that works out to rectify our lunar calendar with the flow of the seasons, so that Pesach will be properly in the springtime. Now, if I have not, as my mother, Aleha Shalom, would have said, fadreid your cup, or fadreid you a cup, enough already, let me add the following. Today, without a Sanhedrin, which I like to refer to as between Sanhedrins, we have a mathematical plan, which I've just described. There's a mathematical plan with the months of the year, not for now, and for the extra Adar, which is simply every 3, 3, 2 years, 3, 3, 3, 2, 7 times in 19 years. It's a blind kind of process. Anybody could do it. You give it to a little school child who knows how to divide. He takes the year, he divides by 19, he looks at the remainder, and if it's 3, 6, 8, 11, 14, 17, 19, it's a Shana Me'uberet, extra Adar. And if not, then it's a Shana Pshuta, which would make it only 1 Adar, 12 months. That's it, simple. In the time of Sanhedrin, they had a little bit more discretion as to when to give that extra month or not. They still had to check the vernal equinox, which is the beginning of springtime. If Pesach would not make it into the springtime, they have to make it a Shana Meuberet. But if it would be in the springtime without an extra month, then there are other factors that they weigh to determine whether the year will have an extra month or not. Factors such as the conditions of roads and bridges for the influx of people around the holiday time. For example, the birthing cycles of sheep and goats to sort of increase the probability that many sheep and goat newborns will be available for Korban Pesach, and other factors as well. Whether the winter has really stopped, whether it feels cold, whether Punxsutawney Phil came out and saw his shadow. I'm kidding about that, and if you understand that, that's good too. Especially since his name was Punxsutawney Phil. I will just tell you, for those who don't know, he is a groundhog, and the alternative name for groundhog is a woodchuck. As in, how much wood could a woodchuck chuck if a woodchuck could chuck wood? As opposed to saying that with groundhog, which doesn't sound as nice. Okay. Now, not only did the Sanhedrin make a determination whether a year would be a Shana Meuberet or not, they did not announce it to the people under normal circumstances until the beginning of Adar. Because the proper way of making that announcement is that next month will be Adar again and not Nisan as you might have expected. And the only month in which you could say that is Adar. If they needed to inform the people that there was going to be an extra month this year, and they needed to tell them sooner, they can tell them from Rosh Hashanah time. Any announcement made before Rosh Hashanah that next year will be a Shana Meuberet has no bearing. Once the year starts with Rosh Hashanah, any statement that this year will be a Shana Meuberet has its effect. There is an offbeat situation that the Mishnah presents of what if they did not get around to making the announcement till the end of Adar, in which case we will had already observed Purim and had already begun the Pesach cleaning and the get that food out of the living room. You know that all food has to be in the kitchen now. No food in the bedroom. Don't do this. Don't do that. Get off the couch. Whatever. And that all changes because they have to do Purim completely again. And only after the second Purim would they start getting ready for Pesach. So that's a fun situation, and it's kind of weird. And there's a discussion, which I'm not going to get into now, as to why the Sanhedrin system is preferable to our calculation, which is neater and predictable and knowable to the average person. Leaving that out for now. Okay, before we leave the subject of the two Adars altogether, let us wish a very special happy birthday to any Jewish boy or girl, although we'll have to focus on the boy because of Bar Mitzvah, whose birthday is today, whose real birthday is today, who was born on the 30th of Adar. The 30th of Adar HaRishon. There is no 30th day in Adar HaSheni, and there is no 30th day in Adar when it's only one in a year. In other words, the 30th of Adar HaRishon exists every 7 years out of every 19-year cycle. And that's it. Furthermore, it has a double identity, a dual identity. Today is the 30th day of the first Adar, but it is also the first day of Rosh Chodesh of the second Adar. That's the way the two-day Rosh Chodeshes work. So what about a boy born 13 years ago? Sorry, what about a boy born today? In 13 years, let's see if that checks out. This is the third year of a cycle. We have the 16th year of a cycle will not be a Shana Meuberet. So his bar mitzvah is 13 years from now. And when will it be? If we say the 30th of Adar follows the 29th, then his birthday will be Rosh Chodesh Nisan. Because in a one Adar year, the day that follows the 29th of Adar is the 1st of Nisan. They don't have a 30th of Adar. And that's one opinion. The other opinion says that today is also known as the first day of Rosh Chodesh Adar HaSheni. And Adar Sheni and Adar Rishon and the one Adar, when there's only one, all have 2 days Rosh Chodesh. The first day of Rosh Chodesh in a regular Adar is the 30th day of Shvat. The 30th day of Adar HaRishon is the first day of Rosh Chodesh Adar. Should have said that the opposite. So the question then is, will the Bar Mitzvah be postponed to Rosh Chodesh Nisan, or will it be the 30th day of Shvat, which happens to be also known as the first day of Rosh Chodesh Adar, when the boy was born? The Mishnah Brura leans in the direction of the first day of Rosh Chodesh Adar and allows the Bar Mitzvah, which means getting an aliyah, and it means reading the Torah and all things that require being a bar mitzvah. And he says we can rely on the other identity of today as the first day of Rosh Chodesh, of the 2-day Rosh Chodesh. So that's the story. Enough of that. Another piece of music, and then we take a total different swing at a different topic. Okay, new topic, follow me this. For the last 5 weeks, counting this Shabbat, Parshat Terumah, Tetzaveh, Ki Tisah, Vayakel Pekudei, we have been studying the details of Melechet HaMishkan, the building of the Mishkan, the Mikdash. And we've spoken in the past weeks about the duplication between Terumah Tetzaveh and Vayakel Pekudei, and the fact that Cheto Egel, the sin of the golden calf, is right in between the two different accounts. And we had a discussion, about whether mitzvot are goals in and of themselves, or are they means towards a greater goal? And I believe the answer is yes and yes. And that was relevant to whether the need for the Mikdash was there before Cheto Egel and since Cheto Egel, and has human nature changed, etc. All of those different things bear on a decision in this direction. I want to review one aspect which for me was new this year, and I'm trying to remember without having to listen to last week's show whether I mentioned it or not. I've told you many times that between the writing of something in Torah Tidbits, the shiur that I give on Monday, the occasional shiur that I give on a different day, then opportunity to talk it out, I sometimes don't remember where I said what. So I'm going to run that risk again, but I want to put a little different perspective on it. We are not culminating five sedras about Melechet HaMishkan. We are culminating the second half of the book of Shemot, Exodus, which brings us to the threshold of the entire book of Vayikra, which is Torat Kohanim. In other words, we've spent the five sedras, more or less, in discussing the fashioning and the making of the Mishkan, but the everyday function in the Mishkan is very much the topics of the Sedras to come. So we're sort of in the middle there. The broad question that I have been looking at for a long time, and the one that I sort of came to a personal conclusion, and I really am going to continue bouncing it off people, including the listeners to my voice now, who I would like feedback from, to see if there's emet to what I'm saying or not. The title, I think it was last week, not even this week's Torah tidbits. I have to find it on my crowded desk. Less crowded than usual, but still in turmoil. Anyway, one of the titles recently was, "Will the Real Mishkan Please Stand Up?" Meaning, is the Mishkan as described in Truma and Tetzaveh, the pristine command of making a mikdash, that God will dwell among us as a result of it, the pristine presentation with the background of the recent Matan Torah, and shortly before that, the crossing of the sea and the song of the sea, and before that, the Exodus from Egypt. Is that the real Mishkan? Even though no one of that generation that actually built it and used it were privy to the content of Truma and Tetzaveh. That was part of the Torah, which was received after the fact, at the end of the 40 years of wandering. And Bishat Maaseh, when they actually were building the Mishkan, they didn't know about that part. That's the question, because the second alternative is the presentation in Vayakhel and Pekudei, where they were actually told by Moshe to gather materials, and Bezalel and Aholiab were appointed as the chief artisans, and the people volunteered their talents and their time and their possessions. All of that, is that the real one? With the key being that Cheto Egel is in the backdrop, in the background. And that has always bothered me. And I'm convinced that of all the repetition that there is between Melechet HaMishkan Part 1 and Melechet HaMishkan Part 2, the one thing that is not repeated, the one thing that belongs to the first presentation in Parsha Truma, is the command, V'asu li mikdash, V'shachanti b'tocham, make a mikdash. Whatever we have done that changed the look of that command was after the fact. In other words, I am not saying it wasn't after the fact, because that command wasn't given yet. It was given after Moshe came down from Har Sinai on Yom Kippur. Yeah, but the Torah doesn't say that. The Torah does not repeat that, even though that's when the people heard the command. The Torah presents the command of making a mikdash once at the beginning of Parshat Teruma. And therefore, my conclusion is that the Mishkan, the real Mishkan, was not tainted by Cheto Egel, because it was commanded up front before Cheto Egel occurred. I can't exactly say that nothing changed with Cheto Egel. It was a major, major change. But I won't erase the power of the Asuli Mikdash v'Shachanti B'Tocham, and they won't take away any of the specialness of that statement that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made to Bnei Yisrael. Halavai, we didn't listen to it then. And a whole bunch of other halavais. But on that note, I will wish you Chodesh Tov and Shabbat Shalom and L'Hishtameah.
Revach, revach, revach.